Webcomics Weekly.
Are you recording?
Yeah, I'm recording right now.
Webcomics Weekly.
I love how only he knew he was recording, so the pitch immediately went up.
Hey!
Oh, God.
The rest of us are still
so
like,
tired.
Hey, when do we start? Oh, God. I want to go back to bed.
Our recording voices are like,
well, okay. So pretty soon you'll hit the record button, right, Chris?
I just did, Scott.
Oh, my God. Hi, Chris. Webcomics Weekly.
What? Guys, let me know when you've started recording.
David, we're already in. Go ahead.
All right, Chris, I'm ready to go.
Okay, that is awesome. Wonderful. Oh, you know what, guys? It's not recording yet. Hold on. I need to take a look.
Just let me know.
Yeah, it's not working.
I'm getting vocal whiplash.
Well, should we start by saying what a good time we had at Emerald City last weekend?
Yeah,
I agree. No, I couldn't have said it better myself, Brad. God, Jesus. I know. He sounded great before too.
I don't understand.
So sad.
This.
Guys, on next week's Webcomics Weekly, we're doing a fundraising drive for the cable network that goes to Brad's house. Not for Brad, just for the Comcast system that goes to his house.
Before we get any further into this, why don't we call Brad on the landline and let him run it that way?
You mean Skype him back at his home phone number?
Yeah, and then at least that way he'll be intelligible.
I ain't mad at you. Let's do it that way.
Okay. All right.
Well, what does Brad think about that?
Oh, yeah, Brad, how do you feel about that?
If you think it's bad, wait till you hear my land.
Brad says yes.
Oh, my God.
Surely a landline would be better. And then cut to Brad. He's got one of those old ones. You have to sweep the field and charge it up to receive the call.
He's licking his fingers and holding them on two wires.
Klondike 555. Oh, Brad, it's us. Oh, all right. Ready to go.
Okay, hold on. Let me type some numbers into this Skype machine.
Yeah, pull them in that way.
And I'm going to hang you up a second, Brad, because you're just making no sense whatsoever. All right. Yeah, Brad Geiger, everyone.
Okay. Okay, we have our fun.
Okay, we have our fun with Brad.
But let's talk about something serious today.
Let's talk about comics.
Deep vein thrombosis.
Oh, hello, flights.
It's an
issue. I almost told Skype that I was calling from Botswana. Botswana.
What's the number, the code for that?
617.
Wow. So Brad's texting me tonight to remind me that I was running late was get thee to a Skypery, and I thought that was pretty clever.
That is pretty good. Unfortunately, if you were to say it on the air, it would be...
It would sound a little something like... Yeah, exactly. End of line. We get packets of Brad. We don't get Brad. We just get packets of Brad.
Right. It's up to the listener to reassemble Brad at home.
Right. And you may not even get all the packets in order, but you'll get them all. You'll get all the packets. It's kind of like a puzzle within a puzzle.
Okay. Now, how does this sound?
We can understand everything you're saying.
It sounds like you're on a phone, but that is fine because now we can
understand. Yeah, that's better.
You.
All right.
Yeah, that's better than playing asking if we want to play a game.
Brad, the most ideal thing for you to do at this point would be, if you still have your iPhone headset, to put that in.
The iPhone. Yeah. Hold on a second.
Why does that make a difference?
You can't hear yourself talking over his phone right now? You can't hear that echo?
Oh, I can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, but why is that the case? That doesn't seem like a good...
Because he's got his phone jacked up with the volume so high that the voice is coming out of the earpiece and going back into the speaker at the bottom.
Oh. Okay, how's this?
That sounds pretty good, Brad. I think we got this worked out.
Nice.
And then his phone charge dies.
You know what? I'm going to plug it in just in case. That's a good point.
All right, let's pretend that this didn't happen. Let's just start over.
Hey guys! Webcomics Weekly.
Webcomics Weekly. Serious topic this week, gentlemen.
Really dark.
Tonight, murder in webcomics. It's a serious topic.
You know what? I do have a serious topic for us. If you guys would like to discuss.
All righty, let's do it.
Well, first of all, let us do recap the greatness that was the 2010 Emerald City Comic Con.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great convention.
That was insanity.
Great show.
That was, yeah. That Saturday was amazing. That was a fantastic Saturday.
Yeah, that was like almost a San Diego Saturday.
It was.
Mm-hmm. It was for me, boy. That was a good one.
Whoa, what happened to the recession? Well, not in comics.
And, you know, I think we've done that panel that we did an awful lot of times. That was probably one of the best time, one of the best panels we did together.
Yeah, it felt really fresh. That one felt
fun. Not you know what? You could tell we haven't done that
packed.
Talk. Like,
yeah. Yeah, well, Chris had that picture up on Twitter. I mean, and immediately got a text message from my wife saying, that place is crowded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you bring Leonard Nimoy and Stan Lee in, that's what happens, I guess.
Not that they were on our panel, but...
But I have to say, it was pretty impressive that they were sitting in the audience. I was like, hey, Nimoy! It was nice to give him the shout-out during the talk. That was good.
Yeah, but have you seen his comic? Oh, God.
You know what, too? He only started with five in the buffer. Not a good idea.
When should I make shirts?
We all gave the collective, oh, Leonard. It's like,
oh, God. Oh. Spock making shirts at this point just... ain't logical.
Da, 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 da.
Spock. Spock.
Yeah, my favorite part was when Scott dropped either an S-bomb or I think it was an S-bomb. He said, oh, wait a minute. How many people have kids sitting next to him? And he saw the hands go up. And he said, oh, no. And that one little kid off to the side said, say more bad stuff. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. It was last weekend.
Little voice.
You know what? I didn't realize till the end of the talk that was actually Chris that said that.
Tell me the words that my parents wouldn't teach me.
I need to learn these.
Vagina, Chris.
Is that a bad word or is that just a fun word?
See him writing it down. Flabbergasted. What does it mean? Is that a context? Is it bad or is it just goofy sounding? Anyway, yeah, that was a fun talk. You could tell we hadn't done it in a year, too, because it felt like we weren't retreading everything for the 19th time.
I think that doing the 20-second answer thing is a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, we gave it, but it was 30 seconds for us this go-around, right? Seemed like.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
But most of them were around 20 seconds, I think.
No, that's true. Mm. Short and sweet.
Nice. Short. Nice and concise. We did it. We made it happen.
Proud
but listen, despite the fact that things are going so great for independent publishers and people who put their comics maybe on the webs, no jokes, newspapers cutting comic strips, this is from ABC World News, says, no matter how bad the news, no matter how grim the headlines, you can always count on a smile from at least one corner of the daily newspapers, the comics. So already ABC News has... issued a fallacy.
Dubious reporting there.
Yeah. That's right out of the gate. You know that I'm smelling some yellow journalism here. The article continues. But in this day, when we could use a laugh more than ever, the reality facing the comic section is anything but funny. With the newspaper business hemorrhaging readers and money, newspapers are slicing the number of strips they carry. Artist and filmmaker Mark Tatuli said he has seen 30 newspapers drop his strip Leo in the last 18 months. Quote, newspapers are saving money wherever they can, and they're doing it by cutting the comics.
What? I'm shocked.
It's affecting comics across the board. Leo was growing close to 300 newspapers. And then the market just went crazy, Tatuli said, adding that Leo is now in 270 papers. Okay. That seems like a really small margin to affect a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a really good point.
I am more shocked, really shocked, that the four of us didn't collectively call this 5 to 10 years ago. Amazed that we didn't see this coming.
The roll call of newspapers shedding comic strips is growing.
I like that Brad got the rolling laugh on that one. I love it when Brad's laugh starts off small and goes, ha, 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 ha,
ha. That's because I was doing the math.
from the Portland Oregonian,
Oregonian.
From the Portland orangutan, which shed 10 strips last year to the Washington Post, the cash-strapped Washington Times recently went a step further, eliminating its Sunday comics section entirely. Now listen to this. The savings can be enormous. The Star Ledger of Newark, New Jersey told readers that reducing the comic section by one page would save $300,000 a year.
Wow.
Really?
That's what it says, according to the Star Ledger of Newark.
I'm going to do the math on that. What did they say, $100,000 a page?
And he said it like this. No, hey, listen, we could save here's the situation. Here's the situation.
Hey, Brad, you know layout. How many comics would you say are average on a page?
Well, yeah. Okay, if they're a broadsheet, boy, I wish I had a paper in the house here.
That's telling.
Let's see. Oh, man.
Well, two or three
We can say that they'd have two columns. They're about 2 inches deep. How deep is a daily newspaper broadsheet anymore? Is it 16 inches?
It's so deep. So deep, so deep, put her butt to sleep. No, I'm kidding. I don't know.
So let's say that it's about 16 inches. All right, then you'd be able to get about eight comics down in a row. You'd be able to get 16 comics on a broadsheet page.
16 comics. All right, you guys keep talking. I want to do the math on that.
Okay.
Now, they're going to be spending between for an average strip, not a huge like Garfield is going to cost more.
Right, and I'm going to run.
Something that's
I'm gonna
brand
run
new
numbers.
Is going to cost less.
I'm going to run so these numbers be, for 6 days a week too, not 7 days a week, because the Sunday would be charged
right.
separate.
So let's say they're going to be running between $20 and $30 a week per strip.
Mm-hmm.
So call it, split it down the middle, call it $25 a week.
Okay.
Multiply that by 16.
No, Brad, you keep talking. We don't have to bore people with that.
Some newspapers are trying to mask the cutbacks by holding Survivor-style contests, asking readers which strips to jettison and which to pick up. The number of strips dropped usually outnumbers the strips added, although sometimes papers will continue providing the eliminated cartoons online.
Why?
Newer strips are often, I don't know, newer strips are often the ones cut first, but even so-called legacy comics are feeling the pinch. Mason and Mick Mastrioani
what?
Draw and write BC from a studio on the outskirts of this upstate New York City. The strip filled with cavemen and slapstick humor. Why are you describing BC to anyone at this point?
Well, maybe they get some new readers.
Was in a strip about cavemen. There's an idea. Was handed down from their late grandfather, John Hart, who created it in the late 1950s. The number of newspapers carrying BC has fallen by about 5% a year over the last few years. Quote, a lot of times, if we get canceled by a big paper, we'll talk to our syndicate, see what happened, and 9 times out of 10, it's because either the paper went out of business or just dropped an entire page of comics to save space and costs.
Hmm. Wow, okay,
I'm getting about $20,000 a year for a page if we can assume that there are 16 comics on the page.
Oh, really? I got $99,000.
Well, how did you get that?
So it's 50.
I went $25
I got
$3.6 million.
But my
$25 a week times 16, so that's $400 a week times 52
right.
weeks in a year, and I got
right.
$20,800.
Right, but you're forgetting it's 6 installments of that.
No. That's $25 a week.
Oh, a week?
Not a day. A week.
Oh,
I only got $100,000 if I was paying them $20 a day. Jeez, what a ridiculously low sum of money.
Wait a minute. What is it again?
25. Wow. All right. So Brad's number is right. Brad's number is right. Unless they pack in more than 16 comics on a page, it's somewhere at best, Brad. It's probably in the 20 to 40,000 range, but probably around 20,000, right?
Right.
A week.
Annually. See, that's the thing about syndicates. You know, their books aren't really on the table. But I got these figures a while ago when I was talking to some people at the newspapers that I've worked at. And, you know, some papers pay more, some papers pay less. But that was the figures that I was given way back when I started this in 2000. When I was trying to price mine, I went to some people and I said, you know, tell me where I ought to be. And those were the numbers I got at that time. Was, you know, some of them are $10 a week, some of them are $20, some of them are $30. Right there in the $30 a week category, you're talking about a metropolitan sized newspaper,
right?
Running a mid level strip.
Hmm.
I'm going to work backwards to see what you would have to get to get 100,000. So you guys keep talking.
Okay, I'll keep reading. Okay, here I am. The strips that survived this comics crisis are finding it more crowded. To save costs, newspapers are squeezing more strips into the ever-shrinking pages. In 1950, Little Orphan Annie...
No. It's important to know your history. Let's figure out what's going wrong here.
Ran as a full-page strip in most Sunday papers. Today, it often runs at one-third of a page, making one-third of an impact. Is what I'm saying. Little Orphan Annie.
I think that algorithm is also one third of an impact, also divided by 100 years of relevancy.
No kidding. The financial struggles of newspapers are not the only problem. In the age of Nintendo and Facebook, it's hard for the comics to compete for the attention of children, especially when we're running Little Orphan Annie.
Yeah. Do you think there's a correlation there?
I want to play Halo. No, you should read the comics. Here's one of my favorite. It's about orphans and newsies.
Right, exactly.
It's about a war profiteer.
Exactly. Every single construct in that comic is not... Nobody knows what those things are anymore.
Right.
What's
right.
An orphan? What's an orphanage? What's a war profiteer? I don't understand.
Why does this man have a manservant that is not allowed to be a U.S. citizen? I don't understand any of this.
Jeez. In 1945, the demand for comics was so strong, New York City Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia famously read the funnies over the radio during a newspaper strike.
Radio. That right there is context, but keep going.
It's hard to imagine such a scenario today. Quote, they are not a part of the national conversation anymore, Tattulli said. It used to be that you could turn on Johnny Carson and hear him say, hey, did you see that strip today? I remember the show News Radio when they had a whole episode about Dilbert. And, of course, everyone knew what they were talking about. Okay. Well, there's no Johnny Carson anymore either. Come on, guys. You're the past.
Oh, actually, I've got a page of the Oregonian right here.
Today, new comics, nobody has a clue, he said. We have a very strong following, but it's more niche than it's ever been. In search of new audiences, the newspaper comics are now posted online. But the cartoonists do not make nearly as much money from the internet as they do from papers. Quote, cartoonists in general are looking to other avenues, other ways to get their products out there. Licensing, movies, television, things like that, Mason Mastriani said. Putting them online is great for exposure. It's great for readership. It may help with licensing or merchandising at some point. But as far as making money directly from online, I'm not sure if it can be done or it will ever be done.
We can't move a single one of these Little Orphan Annie messenger bags. I don't understand. Why aren't these propeller beanies going anywhere? Oh, God.
The Dagwood Sandwich Shop licensees are not happy.
People are getting mad.
We can't do it, therefore nobody could possibly do it. That's really what that means.
The mastery. Oh, go ahead.
I just found a copy of the Oregonian comics page on the internet. And I was close. They have 20 comics on there. So that raises our grand total for a year to $31,200.
Well, yeah, and if a page happened to have 16 comics on it, they'd have to be charging $120 a week, which we know is not happening, to get to 100,000. So something's funny.
Yeah, there's no comic that. Well, I mean,
You know what though? Unless Brad, unless they're also factoring in the actual printing costs and paper costs to lose that page.
Oh yeah.
Well, no,
listen, you guys started doing math.
That's possible. Oh, sorry.
You guys started doing numbers, and I just started tuning out. I started thinking about like Mountain Dew and stuff. Are you guys trying to calculate how it could possibly get to $300,000 of savings by dropping
right.
the comics page?
And I think, and I think the key number was the newsprint is expensive, and that's conceivably the.
Isn't that sad that the ink and the paper cost more than the comics?
Hold on, hold on. That's not true. Because right. I just priced out printing a black and white newsprint. Okay.
Okay.
11x17 tabloid. If I want to get black and white, not Sundays, but black and white, I could print 2,000 of them for like $700. Hold on, let me look at my quote.
Yeah, you said it was something like it ended up being like, what was it?
It was under
30
1,000.
Cents for a huge,
definitely under 1,000.
Yeah.
Was the name of the place I just wish that I could get it in color. Okay, here's my quote. I'm going to look now. Are you ready? Come on, PDF viewer. Okay, so this is from Park Press. They do newsprint tabloid. This is a 16-page tabloid little newspaper section, right? So newsprint magazine, 16 pages on 30-pound newsprint, uncoated, 11x17. 2,000 would be $739. Now, for an additional 1,000 printed after that, it would cost me an extra $76.
All right. Well, maybe they're hurting also.
Maybe. I don't know.
Are you guys computing the amount of money that is given to that the syndicate would get or the cartoonist would receive? Is that where the
best of my knowledge? That's how much the comic costs the newspaper.
Okay.
Well, and don't forget, Chris, that's not even what the cartoonist is receiving.
No, I know absolutely. So I'm saying maybe that was where the discrepancy is, but no, I guess you're right.
I think the biggest shocker, and we need to circle back around on this, is that absolutely nobody, and I mean nobody, saw this coming. once baby boomers started to lose their eyesight, and once a certain thing started to happen. That newspapers would start slipping. I mean, this is ridiculously out of nowhere. I could not have predicted this, is what I'm saying.
Hold on. Let me finish this article up. The old bastards that took over BC from the super old dead bastard says that they've been trying to get a new comic off the ground, The Dogs of Sea Kennel. They have drawn a new Sea Kennel strip every day for 2 years. So far, the strip can only be viewed online. Newspapers, they said, have been unwilling to embrace new strips at a time when they are cutting back. We're waiting for the climate to get a little better, Mason says. Asked if he thinks BC will be around for his grandchildren to, I guess, take over and start drawing. Mastriani said, that is a very difficult question to answer. I wish I had a crystal ball. I don't think that comics will ever disappear, but comics in the form they are now, syndicated in the newspaper, might disappear at some point. Yeah, like next year. I think it's very telling, okay? I think it's very, very telling. And Brad, you and I walked around the show a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the two biggest crowds at the Emerald City Comic Con were for Stan Lee and Leonard Nimoy. Those were the two biggest crowds.
Absolutely.
Okay. So now, goddamn automatic cat litter box. Cow.
It's actually very quiet for us.
Okay. Yeah. Now, aside from he sits all day not pissing or shitting. I'm telling you.
He waits and bides his time. He's like the cat on.
No, he knows. Head. He knows that he steps in it and a little infrared thing breaks and then in 10 minutes later it's going to go off. So he's like, is he on the phone? 10 minutes, he's going to be super pissed. Because I swear to God, if I look for him now, he's just sitting in the doorway looking at me going, you son of a bitch. All right. But no, okay, so aside from Stan Lee and Leonard Nimoy, who are just big media guests, okay, and kind of superstars, when it comes to just the people making current content, nobody had a bigger line than Kate Beaton.
Absolutely.
And Jeff Jocks. So I think probably the biggest... There he is. There's that son of a bitch cat. I think the biggest draw of creators currently that are currently producing new content at that show were webcomic guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
easily.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that I saw that was pretty long was Jeff Johns, but I will agree with you on principle that was totally the case. I mean, web comics were getting a huge crowd.
And these are the people that they want, that ABC News is reporting it can't make any money, that there's no money to be made on online comics.
Well, hold on a second. I don't think that's fair. I think that ABC has reported that the two guys that do BC can't make any money online.
Right. That's a fair way to put
it. I'm reading this Dogs of Sea Kennel that I've located.
Oh, you know what? I was too, actually. That's funny.
I'm laughing. I mean, you've heard me. I'm sorry if our listeners can't tell what you guys were saying over the sound of my
Chris.
Ruckus laughter.
That's
well, you know, and that's the other thing that really bugs me is that is such a pre-made niche audience. I mean, we all know that whole pet. That whole pet audience thing. Dave, you know that from selling the pug book.
Oh, yes.
When somebody comes up and they've got a pug or they've even got a dog, they see that pug book and it's like they make a beeline for it.
Yeah, you'd have to be a real lowlife to sell something like that to a niche audience.
No, I told you guys one of the reasons why I made that book was to be a gateway drug, basically. I wanted it to be... an instant sell for the people that like that sort of stuff. You know?
That's why my next book, because I was trying to think of what to do for the cover of book 8, and I think it's just going to be Scratch doing something, and I think the title of the book is going to be Aw, Just Like My Cat.
Nice.
How you cannot be able to successfully market something like a strip about dogs to the hundreds and thousands of dog owners out there that go nuts over anything with dogs in it because of that response.
I actually have an interesting piece of insight on that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to – now keep in mind this is back when I started, all right? So this was, I would say, 2007, 2008. Oh, excuse me. Jeez Christ. 1997, 1998. Okay, I got to talk to the comics page editor at the Dallas Morning News. And he told me all about their fights with Bill Watterson. And he was telling me, and I had someone confirm this more recently, but he was telling me that the syndicates don't bring them strips with animals as main characters anymore because the newspapers don't want them.
Because
once they're in, you can't get rid of them. Like, you will really upset readers. They're too difficult to get to dump if you ever want to dump them.
It's probably like killing a pet to some of those people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just they see a strip.
Why does that make you laugh?
Because in my head, it's like, we got to pull this strip. But rather than just like, thanks, guys, for the run, like in the last strip, they are putting the main character to death.
it's just Fred Bassett with the feet up, you know?
Sorry, we had to do it.
Scott, can you go back to that ABC News story and see? They said that they've been doing that Dogs of Sea Kennel, and they mentioned a rate. Did they say they're doing it every day?
They've been drawing a new sea kennel strip every day for 2 years.
Because on the website, it looks like they're only updating Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, Well, by day, they meant... the Latin Deus, which means a place that you stand and tell lies.
That was a downright squeal.
I know.
Maybe they're only posting them Monday, Wednesday, Friday to stretch it out.
Maybe they're building a buffer. That is possible.
Hey, I would like to start a new one of the things I want to say about the podcast coming back is in addition to us kind of going, well, we're just going to wing it, you know, people like hearing us talk and we don't have to answer the same 12 questions over and over again. I really feel like everyone's just kind of thrown it balls to the walls. I just want to say it's a lot of fun. I just wanted to throw that out there. But it's made me feel like we could do something like this. I would like to introduce a new segment. Where every week we point out where Thrall says something completely off the wall, stupid. and
is there enough material for that?
But we need a jingle. Chris, can you and me maybe improv a jingle real quick? What should we call it? What can we call it?
Nah, I'm no good at naming things.
No, you're good at naming things. What, like, think about Raw, okay? And then we got to – what about off
here,
the
how about, How about this? Yeah. If you want to have the feeling that you've lost a ball, here comes another quote from old Ted Raw.
That's – wow.
Hey, say. God, you didn't have to get mean about it.
Man.
I was just going to call, like, Ted Raw's Corner or something like that. I mean, yeah. That's just mean.
Too strong.
Icy. Too strong.
Yeah,
the guy's got kids.
You know what?
It's strong. If you, it sounds like you just tried to beat up Ted Raw with an Ovaltine commercial.
I tried to beat him up using the decade of the 1950s.
I thought we'd do like a current affair. Chris, you're good at sound effects, so you know the current affair schwa thing. I'm just gonna do it. Yeah, right. Okay, so I'm gonna say the title, and then you give me the thing, and then are you ready?
All right, go ahead.
Okay, it's time for a new segment called Off the Raw.
Raw.
Okay, good. So over at the Daily Cartoonist, or as I like to call it, nothing happening unless I argue with Ted Raw. So there was an article on New York Times article talking about how there's a surge of Republicans Surge of Republicans of Comics is awesome. Surge of Republicans of Comics. So essentially what they're saying is that as modern-day American newspaper comic strip slowly chokes to death, done in by shrinking spaces and exhausted franchises, its more vibrant ancestors are living the renewed luxury. Comic strips are the most empirical kind of art. Each installment is intended to last as long as a single day's paper. Now, though, virtually every major American strip of the past century or so is being reprinted in its entirety in handsome, well-designed editions with better reproduction than it had the first time around. Okay, so basically what it's saying is, books. Oh, republications, not Republicans. Okay. Well, Republicans.
Now who's going nuts?
I'll edit that out. Edit that out in post, Chris.
No, it's okay.
Well, listen, the article is not important because Ted's just going to use an excuse to crap on webcomics. But what they're saying is that it's really awesome that like IDW and all these guys are reprinting comic strips in these giant collections. Okay. So then Ted comes in at comment number 9 and says, cartoon compilations are a tough sell. Hold on, I should talk like Ted. Cartoon compilations are a tough sell. Sales are directly related to the number of newspapers the feature appears in, print newspapers. A wildly successful web-based comic strip artist has book sales that are a fraction of a third-tier print-based syndicated cartoonist.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So then...
Oh, I remember this quote. Okay.
Ryan comes in, Ryan Sommer from Least I Could Do, and he comes in and he says, that is completely untrue, according to the tracking available to publishers at Nielsen Bookscan. For example, Penny Arcade Volume 1 has sold close to 18,000 copies in stores, while your Year of Loving Dangerously has barely sold a few hundred. Even your Andrews McNeil titles have just made it to the 1,000 sold in stores mark. What your statement should have read is that a wildly successful web-based comic strip book has sales of a single title that are greater than all the books you have ever sold in your career via brick-and-mortar shops.
Oh,
it's getting heavy, hot and heavy.
No, Ryan nailed it with that.
God.
And then Ted came back with just just utterly destroyed Ryan. Just took him apart by saying, "Bookscan is utter crap." Total. And no one who cares about accuracy should trust their numbers.
Oh boy, touche, Ted.
I'm remembering somebody else who used a lot of that type of argument, who's evaporated. So,
yeah,
maybe Ted will also just go away.
Hmm. Not if we hope for this segment to survive. So that has been another installment of Off the Raw.
Now, okay.
I'm still liking my 1950s version. I'm gonna hold fast to that.
If you want to hit the hay, no, that's wrong.
You know what? This is our equivalent of Ricky Gervais's Monkey News.
Oh yeah, it is Monkey News. Oh, he's quoting it again. Dumbass Ted.
He's got lots of nerve. He's got some gall. Here's our friend. So, you know, coming back to the...
You left that one at the train station and just waving goodbye as the train takes off.
Oh, God. He's got a lot of nerve. He's got some balls. If you did... so anyway, I was thinking that...
Brad, you were saying. Brad, you were saying.
You know, just something that really bugs me because, you know, if you go back to the birth of the comic strip as we know it, it was William Randolph Hearst that came up with this idea of doing this comic strip thing to sell newspapers. That's the whole reason that comic strips were born, was to sell newspapers. And over the decades, we've gotten so far away from that. And I really do firmly believe that if we went back to using the comic strip the way it is intended to be used, we could really do a significant role in bringing newspapers, not all the way back, but at least give them a couple more years on their lifespan.
I know Brad, that sounds Brad, nuts, Brad,
but
Brad,
I really believe that.
Well, you're living out a giant factor, though, man, because you have to be aware of the time in which that happened, you know? I mean, in the 50s, when those comic strips were first starting to really sell papers, there was stuff happening in comics that were cutting edge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were talking about this about Charles Schulz, where everyone says that, you know, towards... What was that?
I think there was a sneeze.
Charles Schulz was, towards the end of his career, was kind of not as funny, but that's not the case. Because I don't think his art or writing change. It's just that what used to be cutting edge, everyone adopted. Like everyone just kind of caught up with him. So where in 1950s comic strips, animals never talked in word balloons to anybody. And kids never spoke like adults. Now that's everywhere, and it just seems like he's not doing anything special. But you're not going to. I mean, you'd really have to put some cutting edge comic strips in the paper to do anything similar to what they did for papers back in the 50s.
Yeah, but you know what?
I think you're right.
I think, Brad, it goes even more basic than that. And this is where I get mad at print guys, because they're like, they're not treating comic strips right, or they're not doing enough local news or this and that, you know. And my core argument is, like, if you were to bring in a business consultant to any newspaper in America and say, okay, here's what we're up against, the internet, how do we beat it? The problem is their fundamental business offering is to bring you what is new in the world. And as we all know, there's no way you can get that print fast enough to be any quicker than 12 to 18 hours of old news, you know?
Yeah.
So they are fundamentally behind in their core business product. I mean, you would not start a newspaper today if you were starting from scratch, because you'd be like, well, wait a minute. My core fundamental business product is to offer the newest thing possible, and the newest thing possible is available online, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what you do with comics, you're not going to save the newspapers. Their basic business thing is outdated now.
Did you guys see this was when did I post this? Around the 4th of March, I posted a link to John C. Dvorak's article on how the newspaper killed itself. Did you guys read that at all?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't see it. I'm sorry. What was it?
Well, so basically, let's see if I can sum it up here. But Dvorak basically attributes it to newspapers syndicating all of their content nationally. So
it becomes McDonald's, like, you know, everybody has the same thing everywhere.
Right, right, right. So what it says, let's see if I can find you guys talking. Let me see if I can find the salient points here.
Well, I might be able to help out there, because it's something that it's another thing that it's another common rant I go on, and that is, in my opinion, if the newspapers are going to survive, they're going to have to go hyper local, because they can't beat CNN. They can't beat the internet for world and national news. But one thing, like, for example, the Philadelphia paper can do better than the internet, better than CNN, better than anybody, is cover Philadelphia. And because we've got the resources to do that, and they've got the structures involved. So the step one, if I was in charge of a newspaper, it would be anything outside of the city limits doesn't exist. Step two is I would disassociate from the Associated Press immediately.
Yeah,
I don't need their photos.
He says that.
Okay, it's well then, yeah, we're talking about much the same thing. I wouldn't send my stories out to the Associated Press, and I don't need any stories from the Associated Press. And immediately, in doing that one step, your content becomes that much more unique and harder to find anyplace else. Now you can put that on the web, put some protections in place to at least try to combat people from swiping your stuff, and now you've got specialized content on the web, which we all know that you can charge for.
So here's what he says. He says, the decline of the Big Metro Daily began with the advent of television. The internet has sped up that deterioration by highlighting the curious redundancy of the news. Ironically, this began with the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times syndicating their entire paper for anyone who wanted to pay for it. Now there are papers all over the country running the exact same stories and columnists that you find in the Times. They're there when you read Google News, thousands of redundant stories, all the same. The Associated Press is part of the problem as well. How stupid has it become? Here's an example. Once in a while, there's a story about XYZ. If you visit the New York Times site, it gives you the headline and prompts you to register in order to read the story. What a waste of time. Cut and paste the headline into Google, and you'll find the exact same story running in a Florida paper for free. And now the New York Times wants $30 a month from you. It's laughable. Mm-hmm. Unless it stops syndicating everything to other papers that post the content for free, good luck with that. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
I agree 100%.
The thing, and to bring it back to comic strips, and this is what really bugs me, spending a week in the Penny Arcade offices, okay, which arguably is probably always a bad example to bring up, right? Because it's an anomaly. It's an outlier. So it's really dumb to bring up. But when you see what a dedicated staff of – we'll take Faylauer and Jeff and Kiko and Brian Sunter, all right, and who else is super important? Let's just take those four guys, okay? So you got Koo. You have Kiko, who's doing graphic design. Mike and Jeff are salespeople, and Brian runs the store. You take those four people, and you see how much those four people can get done for a creative team of Mike and Jerry. Okay, that's four people. And now, granted, they're accomplishing a lot because they're giving up a lot of their time in their life to dedicate to this. But let's say that those four people just gave up a fraction of their time. They could still accomplish 1,000 times more than what these syndicates are accomplishing for their creators. It is criminal how little the syndicates are doing anything for these creators. It's criminal. They're doing absolutely nothing but sitting around and hoping that things change. I would like anyone out there in Webcomics Weekly listener land to give me any proof that these syndicates are doing anything to service the creators that they claim to be in partnership with. It really is laughable.
Let me give you an example. I've worked in newspapers since 1992. Holy crap. Yeah, 1992.
Whale hunt?
And do you know that one of the sentences that I've never heard? Hey, there's that guy from the syndicate back here again trying to sell us a comic strip. I've never seen a syndicate rep. I'm sure they probably have come through, but in all that time of hanging out in newsrooms, I've never seen, heard tell of one. It just is.
Well, but
I've seen mailers come, but I've never seen a rep come through the newsroom.
But I don't think, like, at this point in history, is it even necessary for these reps to make FaceTime? I mean, it seems like the selling of strips to newspapers should be a very small and very manageable portion of the syndicate's business for its creators. I mean, you can do that over email.
Yeah, you can, but I mean, supposedly that's one of the benefits that you get from signing with the syndicate is you get this sales force behind you going out and pushing your stuff.
Yeah, but a sales force can do that with a phone and with a BlackBerry and a computer, and never leave New York.
No.
But when are we talking? Are we talking about 1992? Are we talking about right now? Of course, they're not doing anything right now.
But But,
okay, but what I'm saying is that okay.
then, if, no, but if I think you're gonna do all your sales, if you're going to do all your sales through email and phone calls, you don't need a syndicate to do that because I can email and I can phone.
No,
call.
No, 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 no. Yeah, you
yes,
can.
Yes, yes.
No, I know you can, but that's not a solution that should exist. Okay, look, you. I know that you can do it, but there are some people that can and some people that don't want to. So here's what I wish would happen. I wish someone like a John Glenn or maybe a couple comic strip creators that aren't really doing much anymore. I don't know. But what needs to happen is there needs to be something in between what we do and what the syndicate does.
Bah.
That was for you guys. There needs to be something created as kind of an in-between step. That facilitates the things that we do, that we carry, in between. God, it feels like we talked about this on the show already. But
yeah,
there needs to be a company
no,
in
you're
between.
Right.
You know, like if John Glenn were to say, all right, I'm quitting the syndicate. I'm starting this thing called Glenn Enterprises. We are going to help independent creators. I got a team of 6 people. We'll be able to do more for independent comic book and comic strip creators than a syndicate ever could. And if you're already doing it independently, we could probably help facilitate things for you. And if you are a syndicated cartoonist who doesn't know how to do it yourself, but you want to be free of the syndicate, you could. I mean, it just seems like if someone made a focused, lean, mean kind of syndicate that targeted independent creators, it just seems like that's a space that could be filled.
Oh, listen, I agree with you long term. I just think anytime in the next 5 years, I don't know that that's going to happen because for the most part, an outside business savvy person doesn't see that there's money in it yet.
Yeah. There may not be.
They just don't believe it. And for the most part, they're probably right. It's probably like that old business aphorism that 20% of your stuff makes 80% of your profit, you know? It might only be that 20% of successful webcomics would make, you know, 80% of what's to be made out there.
It's frustrating for me, and I might be making enemies by saying this and pissing people off, maybe ruffling feathers, but when you look at the line Kate Beaton has, okay, and then you hear that her next 3 cons are like TCAF and Mocha and SPX, Topatico is handling her incredibly poorly. Like when they see that line there, it should be like, all right, screw it. We got to get her to San Diego. We got to get her to, you know what I mean? We need to start talking to bookstores. You know what I mean? Like for,
yeah, but you know what? She definitely belongs at San Diego and some of the bigger conventions. I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think in that case, you're looking at it wrong. I mean, they're already on, what, the 3rd printing for that book? They're doing fine by her.
Well, okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. You know,
inarguably, most of
Jesus
our sales...
Jesus Christ, are on, pick a side, Brad. You just going to agree with whoever talks last?
No, I'm just... Look, my point is this.
He's got a point, Brad.
Our con sales are always going to be great, but they'll never be. They'll always only be a percentage of what we sell online, you know. And her online sales are probably fantastic around the world. I remember her first book sold out. Her first run sold out in like a day and a half, and then the next one I think was a couple months later. So,
no, I agree.
No,
I agree.
No, you're wrong. It did not sell out in a day and a half.
What?
I just wanted to take a contrary viewpoint on
that. No, I just think. You're right in the sense that if someone wanted what you would need would be a business manager for an individual webcomic, and in that case, that's not what Topatico is, you know.
Well, no, Topatico is going to do all the hip shows, right?
Yeah, but I mean, maybe there's probably some solace in that in the sense that for what it's worth, I'm not looking forward to doing New York Comic Con just because it's an incredibly expensive and hassle show to do, in the sense that doing anything in New York is a hassle, but.
But David, I sold out of everything by the end of Saturday.
Well, I know, and you guys talked me into it. But I mean,
I didn't even go on Sunday.
There's more of a comfort in doing smaller shows because it's so easy to load in, load out. You can stay nearby comfortably, and you're not.
I could see the benefit too. But at the same time, I'm feeling like I'm learning lessons about doing, the more shows that I do, and I don't know why I should have a better result at a bigger show, but I do. In fact, I've been really disappointed at really tiny shows.
Yeah, I've had kind of the same issue, but I think for me, it's more like the kind of thing that I do really well at the comic convention, like Baltimore and Emerald City, and those kind of shows because of the cape nature of what I do, you know.
Right. Well, so
I go to Mocha, they automatically turn their nose up to my stuff because it is not the right crowd for my stuff.
And that's why I was saying, like, I don't know that Kate would necessarily do better at a big show, because if you look at her lines, it was not the neck beard mouth breathers with the Green Lantern shirt on, you know?
Well, what do you – what?
But you know what? I think she has that crossover potential, though.
Oh. but – oh, David, I think that is a point in my side, though. I think that's a point on my side of the argument, though.
Why? Because the big ones, the big shows are really the traditional comic book fans and movie fans and video game fans.
Emerald City is a big show. Look who everyone who turned up to see her.
No, I know. That's what I would say that's a perfect show for, because that's still got a nice cross section and Seattle's
right.
Got this.
So when you're sitting there and you're talking to her and you're like, wow, you must be excited. Where are the next shows you're doing? And you're thinking, all right, San Diego, sure, right, Heroes Con, that's a big show. You should get to Heroes Con. What are the other big ones? Baltimore's kind of going into the toilet, but Baltimore, crap. But it's like, oh, I'm going to TCAF, all right. I'm going to Mocha, okay. Going to SPX, all right. You're going to go to SPX, go to Baltimore, you know?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to SPX this year in favor of Baltimore. I've kind of, last year I soured on that show.
Oh really?
Yeah, it just feels very much like a sad superhero show the more I go to that one.
Huh.
You didn't
hold
well
on a second.
Baltimore
hold on a second.
Year?
You're not going to Baltimore this year?
No. I told you guys this. I'm going to SPX this year.
Oh, so guys, do you want to – because we need to talk.
Okay. Put a
We'll put a pin on that one. But yeah. But
pin on that
my,
one.
So my
I did really good at Baltimore last year.
Well, Brad, listen, what Sheldon does well at is not necessarily what Evil Inc. does well at. I mean, that's a superhero
right.
show. You should definitely go to Baltimore.
I want you guys to go to Baltimore.
I'll be killing my career further with another Harvey Award, so I'll be there.
Are you hosting again?
They asked me to MC again.
Oh, nice.
It's really funny because for those of you that are really, like, into Webcomics Weekly and you know all the ins and outs, you might know that, like, I had a big hissy fit about Emerald City last year, about my placement. And so this year, the guys were super cool and like, Scott, you got the best spot. Here it is. You're facing the door. Best spot. And, you know, the best spot. And then Dave's like, I'll take this spot. And Brad, I think everyone was worried about Brad having that spot, but it looked like it was okay, right? It looked like everyone kind of got a good spot this year.
Yeah.
And then at one point, there's this huge line for Dave, and Chris and I are sitting there with nobody, and Chris looks at me and goes, hey, you know what? I don't think it has anything to do with where's Dave sitting. Dave's just really popped.
Yeah, I think people are here for Dave, and
yeah,
they're not really
here
to
Dave,
see me or Scott. I think that's
or
what
you
it is.
Or me, and I don't think it matters where you're facing it. You made it. You are a dumbass.
Right. I think we could put them in the basement, and there would be a line to find them.
I did not hear that, but
It's just really funny because he turns to me and he goes, so I don't think it's where Dave is sitting. I think it's just
he's doing very well.
People are here for Dave.
Well, you know what, though? In just talking about Seattle, one of the reasons why I love Emerald City Con is, do you guys ever check your Google Analytics by region?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I know for a fact that Seattle and the surrounding environs there are just ridiculous in my – they're all up in my network on my servers.
Yeah, it's a big giant dot.
Like, and that's one of the reasons why you guys convinced me to go to New York Comic Con, because just the amount of traffic that I get from around New York and New Jersey is just ridiculous. So I've got to
take a look. I want to take a look at mine right now and see where they are.
And Chris, wouldn't it be funny if you look? You're like, God damn it, Des Moines! I don't want to go to Des Moines. Show.
Right?
I love Des Moines, Iowa.
Come on,
we'll love it there, Chris. You'll have a great time in Des Moines, Iowa.
Sioux Falls. I don't want to go to Sioux Falls.
And you, I get there and it's like the nation's chainsaw suit capital. I'm like, oh, come on,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
Please, no.
Yeah.
You're up in Helena, Montana, and the line is around the block for Chris Straub. They're like, oh, my God.
And I couldn't be more disappointed for some reason.
Yeah, for whatever reason, you're so downcast.
Thanks,
about it. You're taking,
yeah.
You're taking $20 bills and crying. You're just like, oh.
All right. Ooh, I've got a little spike in Illinois.
How do I get the pictures?
How do I get the internet mint go?
How do I get
I see
it to
a
go?
Lot of I see a lot of green shades.
I see a lot of colors.
Oh, traffic this is, sources.
This is Scott's way of saying he's really popular. I just see a big dot above the U.S.
I just see a dot. What do I do?
I just see one big dot. Like, all right, fine.
Is it visitors map overlay?
So go into Google Analytics and yeah. then
go to visitors, then go to map overlay.
Right.
Then you got to go to the U.S. I wish it would let you just see cities from this level.
I know. That's the one thing.
Oh,
you can.
It has a filter. It says detail level down there towards the bottom at the top.
No. But what I want to see, though, is comparative cities across the U.S. You know
that's
what I mean?
That's what I'm looking at.
Oh, really? Okay.
Says, where do you see details?
At the very bottom, it says your visits, pages per visit, average time on site, blah, blah, blah. And then that row below that, the first thing is detail level.
Oh, and you can choose city.
My big ones are New York is my biggest. Wow. Seattle, my second biggest. Interesting.
Yeah.
Then L.A., San Francisco, Portland, Austin, Chicago, Madison. Where is that?
Ah, I love it. It's true. You're going to be doing a Midwest
Madison,
show.
Wisconsin.
Hey, guys.
Chris, we're so happy to have you here. We love your chainsaw sot. We love everything about
Chainsaw sot?
Yep, and we love Star Sloop. We love everything about the whole strips that you do, Chris. You do great work there. Welcome to Madison. Here's some cheese. Oh, my gosh, you're going to love your stay.
Hey, well, Madison Heights, if you got a con coming up, I'd love to.
And then I look at my logs and, oh, God, Madison is number one. Oh, God, what have I done?
Oh, this is just for the last month, though. Let me go for a year.
Yeah, go for like a year or 18 months.
What?
So Seattle's hugely number one for me, and then New York is pretty close number two, and then Los Angeles. I guess I should do like an LA show. That's kind of stupid that I haven't done that.
Yeah,
you dummy.
It's really
well. You know
stupid.
What? No, wait a minute. There's really no good LA show, is there?
I don't know that there is.
That was terrible.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Loading.
Malky and I have Wondermark did the LA Wizard show, and it was one of the saddest experiences of our lives.
Oh, what made it sad?
Just imagine every Wizard show you've ever been to, and then a tenth of the size.
Oof.
Wow. That sounds pretty bad.
Yes. All right, so here's my breakdown. Number one is New York. Number two is Seattle. Number three, San Francisco. And number four, Chicago.
Oh. So you got a little itinerary.
Yeah, but listen, for con planning, this is a great thing to do is to look at this sucker.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
you know
that's
what?
Good.
I'm actually looking at it. I'm not big in the South. Well, you know what? Texas, I've got Austin is a big one for me.
Yeah, Austin's big for me too.
Is there a show? What's Austin? Is it a staple, right?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Staple, yeah.
Just ruminate on that.
Portland's big for me. What's big in Portland? Stumptown? Is there anything else?
The city of Portland. Is very art friendly. You can just show up, just sit on the corner.
Chris, I thought the way you were pitching that was Portland is big in Portland.
Portland is enjoyable in Portland. Yeah, no, I'm excited because my top five are New York, Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, and Chicago. Seattle and Portland being very close to where I live, so that's nice. And
yeah.
then Chicago, where the three of us are going.
Just in a little bit, yeah.
That'll be a good
But Scotty,
show.
Here's since you're new to this, I want to tell you one other thing to do. So like let's say you're like, oh, should I do the Seattle show? Well, you can look and see, all right, Seattle and New York are my big PvP readers. But
sure.
Then what you do is you go back to region.
Okay.
So click back to region.
Yeah.
And then like click New York, right? So click in on the state of New York.
You got it.
And
see if I can find it.
Because what you got to remember is that a lot of those people are going to be taking a train in, or you know, if they're within a half an hour of New York, they're going to come to New York Comic Con. So look at all those readers that are going to come to you. And that's what's great for con planning is that you go,
Rochester.
Okay,
Rochester.
Right. So Ithaca, Rochester, Manassas, Buffalo, Albany. I mean, some of those aren't going to be specific. But, you know, you can see the commuter cities and see how you can sort of add those on to your New York con quota and go like, all right, this is going to be a good show.
That's interesting.
And then you click over on the state of Jersey and you go, all right. these people will all come, and they none of them will have money, and then. Right? Come on, Jersey. Who's with me? Immediate death threat.
What have you done?
Hey, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Over the last year, I've gotten something like 2 million visitors from the United States, but I've gotten 2 visitors from Greenland. Any cons up there?
Hey-o.
How about an invite?
Chris, how do you feel about trading books for fish?
Show me them fish is what I say. Let me add them.
I like that you would want to know what type of fish it is. Is it scrod? Because I'm not trading for scrod anymore.
I got enough of them.
Anymore.
I had a bad experience with a scrod. A lot more people.
Yeah, and so then the fun one to do is if we ever start doing European shows, go over to Europe and click over and see comparatively. Like, London is a huge city for me, like bigger than New York, bigger than Seattle, and yet there's no way I'm going over for one of those UK comics things or whatever.
Yeah, but what about Germany?
No, Germany's a huge one for me. Germany,
there is a show in Germany called Essen, which is a German word for play. It's actually a gaming convention. Uh-huh. And John Kowalik used to go to Essen every year, and he was like a god there. He was revered as a god there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get the Essen out. Wait, where is it? Is it in Munich? Or is it in Berlin? Or?
Just use your Google Maps to find it.
Hey, well, all right. Hold
on. You'll locate it.
Essen Convention, Germany. Willkommen.
Willkommen. Hello.
I love how half of this Webcomics Weekly is just us typing things into Google.
It's just looking at maps. Let's see. Oh, this is the name of a place.
I'm finding something interesting.
Oh, it's also called Spiel, which means play.
Oh.
Spiel. Is that what Spiel means?
Yeah, Spielberg means play mountain. Isn't that cool?
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like the title of a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song.
All to play on some play mountain. Play mountain.
No enjoyment of that. Clearly not Crosby, Stills, and Nash listeners. That's great.
No. I'm a Buffalo Springfield.
If it was recorded after 1945, I'm not listening to it.
Let's finish this topic of conversation by saying, I'm sorry,
Essen,
Wyoming, but I will not
be coming.
Is
where it's held. May not be happening anymore. It might be done. That's too bad.
Yeah, so I mean, like, because London has huge traffic for me, but I'm not. You know that UK webcomics thing? I look at photos of that thing on Flickr, and I'm like, oh god, it just looks like a small regional US con. You know,
I've
like
never
small,
seen yeah. pictures of it.
It's a one day.
There's no way I'm flying 15 hours to go to do that.
Yeah, that's a bear. You need to do that in conjunction with a vacation.
Like, I would love to do Australia because they have great. A comics history in Australia that's fantastic, and I have a really good audience in Sydney and in Melbourne. But, I mean, that's like a 30-hour flight down there to do those shows. There's no way I'm doing that.
Yeah. It's also it's an outdoor event.
Oh, is it?
Thing. Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, I think so.
God. So
I thought so. Didn't Greg Dean and Liz Dean tell us about that at that anime con, Chris? Yeah. Didn't they go to that?
I don't remember. I know a bunch of people have.
I know Meredith has been.
Oh, well, maybe I should ask her. Webcomics thing. I mean, to be fair, everybody that goes to it says they enjoy it. It's just like, that seems like so much flying for a one-day convention.
Yeah,
that's
it's
like,
not that you're worried about it being – I mean, because you probably make bank there. But it's like, oh, my God, 30 hours in the air or whatever it ends up being total.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You used to make money. I don't know what the pound changing against the dollar right now, you'd make a lot of money. But back when it was doing a good exchange rate, you'd probably make bank. Anyway, I'm looking at it online. Bleh, not sure. Not. But I'm sort of curious to do this Canadian show with Chris and Brad because I'm so curious to see. I mean, I know I have a lot of Canadian readers, but I'm so curious to see if it's going to be worth the hassle of changing the money over and doing all that sort of stuff. You know.
Yeah.
We're going to have Canadian money up there, aren't we?
Right, and we're going to have to charge different prices for our books. And
whoa, really?
Yeah, think about it, because it's not – I mean, it's pretty close right now, the exchange rate, but it's not perfect. And then you have to figure out that you're going to have to take a rate to get it changed back into the U.S. dollar. So,
are you sure they're not going to be also spending American money there?
Well, they might. I don't know. Calgary's pretty far north. I don't know that they would have, like, just carrying around money of U.S. dollars.
Oh, no. You know?
Well, listen up, Canadians. You ain't getting any of my books unless you bring my money.
Can you imagine being a jerk about that? You're in their country going, what is this?
Whoa,
slow down there, Kojak.
I asked
what
for
is
chili
this
cheese fries, not poutine. Get this out of here. I don't want to eat that. I want to eat the identical American equivalent.
Yeah. You just the one time Texas resident comes out and you, Chris, and you're just like, what is this money? I ain't accepting this.
We got too many colors on here.
They're saying this ain't, if it ain't red, white, and blue and or green, I am not accepting it.
All these horrible criteria.
But then did you decide, Chris, are you going up to Banff afterward?
I am not gonna go to Banff.
Boo, Chris.
I am afraid I will not.
I challenge you to, I don't know.
Further reconsider. A second round.
Come on.
Of thinking.
What is Banff?
So, Scott, the show is inviting us up, right? And then they said we're also going to have a retreat for creators after the show, Banff. And Brad and I were like, oh, yes, I would like to see Banff. And Chris was like, I want to get back and play more PlayStation.
Oh, wow.
Wow, ouch.
Yikes.
Right? Did I read that situation right, Chris? You explain to me.
Well, I don't know why are you feel like you need to avoid your home, Dave? I mean, you got a family?
Touché, my friend. Nicely done. Well turned.
You got a loving family that misses you, cares about you? Why don't you want to get back to them?
That was the best possible retort you could have. That was great. That was a beautiful shot. Yeah.
I'd go, but I got PSP right here. I'm enjoying it. I got it on the go. No, honestly, I hate Canada. That's why I'm not going. So the least amount of time I can spend there.
You're like flying in, taking the money, flying out.
Flying immediately back. Web Comics Weekly. We've been going about an hour 7.
Yeah, I'm not touching that. Anyway, so Banff. What does Banff stand for?
Banff, I think it's the name of the city, isn't it?
It was the original before he moved to Germany. That's where Nightcrawler was from.
Somebody said it was pronounced Banff.
Boo. Boo.
No, we asked a Canadian this week at Emerald City, didn't we, Brad? Didn't they say Banff?
Yeah. They said that we were pronouncing it correctly.
Wow.
Oh, wait. No, I thought, oh, darn it. This is going to get we're going to get 10,000 emails for this. I thought
it's
they said
It's Banff.
Right. So wouldn't that be Banff? Banff?
Banff.
Where did you get Banff? Where would there be an I in there?
I don't know. Who told me that? This is probably an old Banff joke to play on Americans.
They're probably like, it's like when someone comes to San Diego and you can tell they're from out of town because they're like, I'm going to Tijuana.
Tijuana. San Diego.
they even get that wrong. I'm from Des Moines.
A lot of people don't know it's a long A.
They don't even get the
San Diego.
San Diego.
All right, gentlemen, I'm ready to wrap it up. What do you say?
Yeah, I was going to say that's about it.
I think we pretty much screeched to a halt at this point. Yeah.
So what did we talk about today? We talked.
What
about
did we learn?
Made some people mad. Talk about syndicates.
Look, listen, it's exciting. It's, well, I mean, it's for us because we're doing fine. There's a lot of change in the air. There's a lot of crazy things going on. I think we're all kind of, it's in the news, you know. It's in the news that comics are changing. In the next, hey, who ordered an iPad? Anyone?
Not me, but
yeah, no, I did.
Not, no.
I you? Ordered one. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Well, I'm developing for it, so I'm
there you go.
I'm trying to put together a children's book for it. So
it's a write-off.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you can sit there with your kid and help Skull put on his pajamas and stuff and get ready for bed. So,
oh, that's cute. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's an idea I came up with so I could justify buying an iPad. no, but
And then here's the thing is that if you have friends over for a slumber party, then you can connect two different iPads. So I'm going to have to buy three iPads. So four iPads, please.
And then you have to have ITV to make it work. So you're just like buying every Apple product.
Yeah, I just think lots of cool stuff is going on and lots of change in the air. So we're going to talk about it. I think it's time to get serious about it and start drilling down, you know.
Well, and Scotty, I think that you and I had not the longest conversation in the world about it, but we talked about it at Emerald City, and I think both are totally valid ways to go about it, which is that your attitude is, look, there needs to be a business person that can approach 5 to 10 serious comics creators and say, look, I will handle this for you. And I think that's a totally valid and long-term brilliant strategy. And my attitude is that I don't think that's going to materialize anytime soon. So I'm going to hire up in the meantime with staff rather than wait for somebody to do it for me, you know? But I think your strategy and my strategy shows that there's not one way to the mountain, you know?
Yeah. Well, agreed.
There's multiple ways to do this, all of which are valid. Like, I mean, Somers hired a staff, and yet other people go and have Topatico do all their work, you know? And so there's totally different ways to do it. But I don't know. I get frustrated with the print guys that say there's absolutely no money to be made. Just at least acknowledge that there are 2 to 3 dozen people making a living, and it's just not you, you know?
They just don't know how to do it. That's the thing. Like, the syndicate doesn't know how to do it. I was talking to another syndicated cartoonist a couple weeks ago, in between the last time we talked about this, a different guy. And, you know, I was asking, do you have the rights to say, okay, I'm going to go make some T-shirts and then make T-shirts? And he's like, yeah, I can do that. But then I got to do all the work and get them half of it.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So nobody wants to do it. So it's not even like, they can't do it. But think about all the time and effort we put into doing the stuff that we do to earn money and how difficult it is even to turn a profit with some of this stuff, right?
Right.
And then add on top of that, the fact that you're going to have to split half of your profits with a syndicate that's doing nothing. That's why you're pursuing it in the first place. There's no way.
Yeah. But the sense that I get from them, though, is that because they, for 5 to 10 to 25, 30 years, they've had their fingers in their ear going, ma, don't want to think about business. Someone else is handling that for me. Ma. The problem with that is that once trouble comes, you're totally reliant on outside forces that you don't control to save your career for you, you know?
Yeah.
And some of these businesses are going to be sold down the line, like United Media will be, and you're going to be left holding the bag. I mean, if you're that's why I got so frustrated reading Daily Cartoonist the other day that you guys probably saw this tweet. I said, like, if you take a job in comics versus making your job in comics, you're always going to be beholden to somebody else for your fate. And that's true, because these guys that took a job with the syndicate, which is what they did essentially, they're beholden to another force to save their ass, whereas as hard as it is, when you make a job in web comics, you're not beholden to anybody and you're more in control of your own future.
So I agree with you, but I also feel that I also feel a little bit sympathetic, because it's not like
you know why I don't feel sympathetic is that they've seen this coming. They saw their clients list shrinking for the last 10 years, you know?
Right. But I don't know. What were they supposed to do about it at that point?
Start re-educating yourself. It's like people that are unwilling to go back to school at 45 because their industry dried up. Well, tough shit. Life is hard. You know, you're not guaranteed success in this life at every stage of your life.
No, that's true. I mean, I know that was an old system for a long time, but why pretend that it's going to come back?
The simple truth is they're knowledge workers, and when your field starts to dry up, you've got to get educated in another field. And they didn't do it. For 10 years, they didn't do it. And yes, I'm sympathetic to a lot of them on an individual basis whenever I'm talking to them. But as a crowd, I get really frustrated, because if you were at all paying attention to how this change was coming about, you knew this was coming down the line. Well, start figuring out in incremental ways how you can extricate yourself from your contract with your syndicate, at least online, and start making baby steps 5, 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah, and then on top of it, when you see
– like, don't just run your damn strips on comics.com and put your fingers in your ear and go, boy, newspapers are going to turn around, because you know damn well that that's not going to happen.
Well, did they do that, or did the syndicates do that?
No, a lot of them did that. It's like, do not sign that contract with an online clause in there. at least get yourself offline and at least get yourself merchandise free and get yourself out of first right of refusal on your book publishing contract. I mean, basic business things. Do some basic business research if it's your career, you know, and you see your client list. I don't know. I just get mad about it. Never mind. I get frustrated.
Oh, my God. Hold on a second. There's something that, well, you know what? I might save this for another. I'll save this for another.
Yeah, hang on to that one.
I'm going to hang on to that. Something just popped up that I'm going to hang on to. But all right.
What was it? What was it? Just give me a taste.
Oh, no, I'll tell you after we stop recording. You'll get to hear all about it.
All right.
Okay.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's a cliffhanger for the next episode. That's good.